So we'll get the minister's appointment. Services that have been regulated. Hence, there is no legislative instrument or service language practitioner has been to regulate the language professionals in the language profession. It is therefore in this stage that the South African Language Practitioners Council Bill will prescribe rules governing the conduct of language professionals and procedures for compliance monitoring and enforcement. Brief overview of the bill. The bill has been prepared in order to regulate and professionalize the language practitioners. The purpose of the bill is to establish the council to determine the objects, powers, duties and functions of the council, to regulate the training of language practitioners and provide for accreditation and registration of language practitioners and ancillary matters. Application of the bill. Although not specifically mentioned in the current bill, the bill will apply to all language practitioners as defined in the bill. An express provision to this effect will be inserted in the bill. We now look at the clauses in the bill. This information has already been provided to members via the memorandum on the objects of the bill that was provided. I will simply deal superficially with those issues. Clause 1 deals with definitions in the bill. Chapter 2 looks at the South African Language Practitioners Council, that is the establishment of the council. Chapter 3 deals with the establishment of the board of the council, as well as the composition of the council. Chapter 4 looks at the appointment of the chief executive officer and staff of the council. Chapter 5 deals with code of conduct for language practitioners and policy directives. Chapter 6 deals with accreditation by the council. Chapter 7, funding and financial management of the council. Chapter 8, keeping of registers, removal and restoration to the register and ancillary matters. Chapter 9 deals with general provisions. I will now deal with the reason why we are here today. The department, the committee received approximately 23 written submissions from members of the public during the public hearings that we held on the 20th and 21st of August 2013. We can summarize the comments as follows. One, it related to the name of the institution that we seek to establish. A concern was raised that the bill should perhaps be called the South African Language Professionals Bill or the South African Language Practice Professionals Bill. I have also received informally other suggestions to say that it could very well be the Language Professionals Bill. We do not have any objection to the proposed name. The other issue which appeared prominently on the comments was that we need to look at the definitions and consistency in the use of terminology. It was suggested that certain definitions need to be added and others need to be limited or extended as the case may be. Chief among those concerns is that the term language practitioner should be substituted for the term language practice professional or language professionals. Furthermore, we were requested to ensure that we maintain consistency in the use of terminology throughout the bill. For example, ethics versus conduct and language industry versus language profession. We will accordingly review the definitions and implement appropriate corrective action and maintain consistency in the use of terminology throughout the bill. Application of the bill. It was suggested that we should indicate to whom the bill applies. As discussed in paragraph 4.31 above, we will expressly mention that the bill applies to all language practitioners as defined in the bill. This can be a standalone provision, or alternatively, we insert a provision where we are establishing the council. Composition of the council. Submissions were made that there appears to be overwhelming representation of government rather than stakeholders themselves. certain institutions requested to have permanent representation to the council because of their inclusive representation of the language practitioners. Also, a request was made that we specify the various categories of language professionals where we will source representation to the council, rather than merely saying the language industry or the language profession. This would thus require that we mention categories like translation services, interpreting, editing, and so on. We will review the composition of the council, but we object to certain institutions having permanencies in the council for the simple reason that organizations evolve over time. Today we might have two institutions having permanencies. A few years later we have one or two other prominent institutions. That would then give us a problem. In any event, we have made provision for language representation which caters for those respective organizations and institutions. In a nutshell, we are saying that those institutions which require to have permanent seats in the council, they cannot have that. However, because we have made provision for representation of language stakeholders, then we can look at including those institutions provided they are nominated in that particular session. We are agreeable to mention the various categories of language practitioners in the definition section and not in the composition of the board. The similar reason is that if we were to say that the board must consist of interpreters, so translators, one might come around and say that we have not mentioned lexicographers and various other people, then it would create unnecessary tension, because everyone would want to see their profession being mentioned in that particular composition of the board. The other issue was the issue of designation of a chairperson of the board, a deputy chairperson. A concern was raised that this should be left to board members themselves and not the minister. Our view is that the practice in state-funded institutions of ministers in this case is that the minister chooses the chairperson after or in consultation with the board at the most. We will amend then that provision to ensure that the minister chooses the respective chairperson and deputy chairperson in consultation with the board. The other issue that was raised is around the Pan South African Language Board. It was submitted that the council should exclude PENSAB in its composition, as PENSAB has its own mandate. We are saying that this bill does not purport to duplicate the functions of PENSAB, but because we are dealing with language matters, we speak directly to the mandate of PENSAB. We thought that it would be prudent to include PENSAB in the composition of the council. As already indicated earlier on, we have said that we will review the composition of the council. However, when it comes to the issue of PENSAB, we are of the view that PENSAB forms an integral part of the council and therefore we should include PENSAB. The other issue that was raised was around appeal. It was submitted that the council itself should provide for an appeal mechanism rather than the minister. The department is of the view that because a decision which has been taken by the council, it therefore is necessary that an independent person be seen to be dealing with the appeal rather than the council itself. Special accreditation, it was submitted that the bill does not provide for special accreditation. It is intended that the detail on the manner, form, and time frames for submitting applications for special accreditation will be provided for in the regulations to the bill. This would, among others, include accreditation for those who qualify either by virtue of experience only or are retired professionals. We have also made certain comments to the bill which were forwarded to the Office of the Legislative Advisor as well as the Parliamentary Legal Advisor on how best we can include those who qualify by virtue separate and specific code of conduct. It was suggested that the bill must contain separate and specific code of conduct applicable to the various categories of language practitioners. The department is of the view that it is not practical to regulate and have a code of conduct for each category individually. We will, however, look at the various codes of conduct adopted by the various institutions and choose the best practice where applicable, taking into account the practicality of having those various codes. Lastly, as a general comment, the department is of the view that some of the concerns arising from the public submissions, like the issue of prescribed fees, categories and levels of accreditation, those issues will be addressed in the regulations as provided for in Section 40 of the bill. The other issue that was raised is the issue around salaries. Certain submissions propose that we should indicate the minimum and maximum that should be paid to language practitioners. We are also view that, as is the practice in other professions, the issue of salaries should not be dictated by the tuition, but should rather be left to the language profession itself. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for the presentation, Professor. And also thank you to us.
There's a lecture that came to my attention, but I will still remember because I'm implicated. I think they just discussed me about the department, but it's fine. I think it's your TV group.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like a point of clarity, sir. About the designation of a chairperson of the board and the deputy chairperson. You say that the practice in state-funded institutions is that the minister chooses the chairperson after consultation, etc. But as far as I know, CONSOL, the board itself chooses the chairperson. Shouldn't that then also be the minister? Just as a point of clarity, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm on 4.2.3. If the one who's written here was not the way it was read, I'm checking if it still means the same thing. If you read, provided aggregation of instead of provide for the control of the aggregation. Does it mean the same thing? Because I like you, not reading it the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe at the end, in the consultation, of the view that the court's decision would have been taken by the council in the first instance. Yes, I think that's good. It is then fit that an independent person be seen to be dealing with the appeal rather than the council itself. I'm just putting a question mark behind that so-called independent person. Who will such an independent person be, and who will be independent? Is it an independent person from outside the language community? I think that will be the case, but it must be dealt with people that is in total control of that specific language if there was a transgression. So I think we must I'm from the view that the representatives of this council will be able to deal with this. But for instance, if there is not a specific person that can is in total control of a certain language, who hasn't been represented on the board or the council, then it's fine. But will we just rethink that? I just want to talk to the bill in broader terms, and I just want to refer to the spirit of this bill. And that's how I see this Language Practitioners Council won't be a council with a guillotine hanging there and people coming in, chop off, go, chop off, go. I think what this Language Practitioners Council must do, and maybe I must do this in Afrikaans, they are my translator over there, just to give you the idea how I feel about this bill, and I'd rather do this very shortly in Afrikaans. Die gees van hierdie wysigingswetsontwerp moet van so aard wees dat dit mense nader aan taal trek.
The spirit of this amendment bill is in such nature that it brings people closer to language.
Dit moet nie 'n afskrikmiddel wees nie. Dit moet nie iets wees wat mense gaan straf nie. Dit moet 'n instrument wees wat elkeen van ons in hierdie land se taal op die ou einde moet bevoordeel. Elke taalspreker moet gelukkig moet wees, want dit gaan oor die bevordering van elke taal. En vir my gaan dit daaroor dat elke taal in ons land werklikwaar verteenwoordig word daar, sodat dit suiwer en korrek en absoluut verstaanbaar word gedra.
It should not be a way in which to frighten people off. It must be an instrument that will be able to, in the end, advantage every one of our languages. Every speaker of every language should be happy, because it is about the promotion of every language. And for me, it is about the fact that every language in our country should really be represented, so that it can understandably conveyed purely and correctly.
Hierdie instrument, die taalpraktisyensraad, is daar ook om veeltaligheid te bevorder. Want dit is so in die vertuinis wat ons gehoor het, as 'n pasiënt by 'n apteek kom of by 'n dokter kom, dan verstaan hulle mekaar nie, omdat die pasiënt, ek kan baie moeilik, is ek nie eerlik, in Engels vir die dokter verduidelik wat is verkeerd met my. Dit is 'n baie persoonlike ding om, jy moet jou eie taal hierdie soort van goed kan sê.
This instrument, this Language Practitioners Council, it is also there to be able to promote multilingualism, because
take myself for instance, and I'll be honest with you, I find it very difficult to explain to a doctor in English what's wrong with me. It is something very personal, and you have to be able to say it in your own language.
So, om net om af te sluit, dat ek ook nie verstaan die druk wat ek in my het oor hierdie ding. Dit was nog nooit in die verlede so nie, en dit is wat ons moet skep nou, hierdie instrument, sodat tale bevorder word in die eerste plek, en dat elke mens, waar hy ook al sy taal lees, of dit nou een brochure, of wat ook al is, moet hy kan hoor, daar is aandag gegee aan my taal. My taal is deur iemand met trots, uit, sê nou maar Engels, of Zulu vertaal. En dis waar oor het gaan. En die leser moet seker wees dat die inligting wat hy kry korrek verstaan is. En dit is die rol dan van hierdie language practitioners wil. Dis nie 'n polisieman met 'n swaard wat rondhardloop en mense se koppe afkap nie. Dit is 'n organisasie wat elke dag moet probeer om standaarde te verhoog, sodat kommunikasie tussen mense op die ou einde beter gedien word. En ons weet dat kommunikasie as gevolg van die verskillende tale dikwels in ons land, ook in die parlement, tot misverstande gelei het en dit moet uit die weg geruim word.
And I can also understand the pressure that I feel within myself about this issue. It has never been the case in the past, and this is what we have to create now, this instrument that we're talking about, so that language can be promoted in the first instance, and that every single person, where he or she ever reads his or her language, whether it be in a perceived brochure or wherever, or where that language is heard, so that person can hear that attention has been given to that language, that my language has been, for instance, translated with pride out of English or Zulu. And this is what it is about. And the reader of that document must be sure that the information that he or she is receiving is being correctly understood. And this is the role of this particular language practitioner's role. It is not a policeman with a sword that's running around and chopping people's heads off. It is an organization that on a daily basis will have to try to increase standards so that communication between individuals eventually will be served better. And we do know that communication, and as a result of the different languages, often in our country, and this also is the case in Parliament, can lead to misunderstandings. And this has to be taken care of. Thank you.
There's also a fact I just want to end off with this. We're talking about the separate and specific code of conduct in 5.1.21, applicable to the various categories of language practitioners. And the chairperson has mentioned this in one of her comments in this committee. I think we must deal with this very, very, very carefully, because we will not, the language practitioners in South Africa will not be a board of academics. There will be people that will be knowledgeable in their language. And sometimes you get people that is very, very knowledgeable, but they don't have a baccalaureate degree or whatever, and a language degree in a certain language. You know that your grandfathers and your uncles and aunts and your father is very, very extremely knowledgeable in their mother tongue. And they can teach and learn a lot of people. What we must try in this, and that's why I refer to the spirit of this bill, which is very, very, very important, because there will be grey areas. We want to sort of pull all the powers of the languages together in this language practitioners council. so that anyone can be feel free. And they must be the categories to get people, if they want to be a language practitioner, and there must be a, maybe they, there's something possible to see if a person is in control of the language, and therefore allow him or her to be on that board. But then, the service of that person, thou not be an academic, must be professional. And I think that's the that's a main thing, that no one can spring or dance around and say, I'm a language practitioner, give me a go. So we must make sure that all those people that we can put them together in this council. But this is a very, very special council. A very special council. It is a council that is very frail. And we must look after it very well. Even in the writing of this legislation, we must look at every word so that everyone understands, and that we, with this vote, be in service of the people speaking their languages, and to make them proud at the end, and to enhance multilingualism in South Africa. I feel very strongly about this language practitioners bill, and our committee must play, we must set, really, we must set a wonderful example in putting together this this bill. Thank you.
May not be needed to reflect as a relies on language. Firstly, I think I have to pose my question on the constitutional mandate of languages. 2.3. That says the bill also seeks to regulate language practitioners and make sure that they are accredited, registered, and offer their services in professional terms. And the second paragraph says, by application, this will tend to professionalize and determine the standards of all languages and the associated services that are rendered by language practitioners. Now, I would like to. I'm sorry because I might not address you properly because I missed the name when you were introduced. But I'll refer to you as the department. Can you please define what has been said by Mr. Van der Bell of the experienced people who are eligible to speaking languages but not being professional? Isn't the second paragraph that I'm talking about, the 2.4, saying the application this will intend professionalize and elevate the status of all languages? Is it not referring to such? Because I know there are people who are doing this, who can talk very eloquently and speak languages and think that they are professionals, but at the same time they are talking colloquial language. That is not a professional language. Can you just define what this means? Is it relating to what was said? Thank you.
My initial general comment, I was listening to what Mr. Van der Bell said, the last story, on the issue of prescribed fees or salaries for language practitioners. Yeah, when I'm sitting here, I'm asking myself that who is to be a professional in a language? Translators, interpreters, and so on. We do have people who can translate, as you have said, who can interpret, you know, be good interpreters, but they haven't gone far with their studies. And I'm asking myself that if we do have such a person, like the chairperson said, her grandma could really translate, can interpret many things. If we have such a person, doing such a job, how is he or she going to be compensated? If we leave the salary issue to the profession itself, does it mean that such people who are not literate enough to attain certain, you know, degrees but can translate and also interpret, there is a mercy of the professionals to see how they will be compensated. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Anabita. I think mine would be, I think one of the questions that we've been asking, especially on 5.1 and 0.11, you know, on speaking about the various categories, because one of the issues that has been raised strongly, there were a few concerns that were raised at the submission. One of the issues, I think, was the regulations of the provision that could lead to a loss of organic languages. I think that's
to remember that if the day of privilege is a bandage in Jesus language, it should be recognized by the devil. You know, I remember the issue that we should not be overlapping the other particular justice that was raised. And then the department should provide those time frames for the implementation of the bill. You know, I think one of the issues that I would raise, because this bill is an NAP, the Section 25 bill, you know, on those responses I'm expecting here, how far reaching the implications of the bill to provincial and local government. You know, how the DAP would ensure that it filters down to the different levels of government and employs some issues of language in radio services. I think it's very important to know that. But further to say that one of the issues that I felt as a public rep is that it is silent on educators and at this education level. Okay, why might I do that? They're teachers, they're specs and everything, they've been trained to do that. So I'm just want to understand the rule practitioners require language to educators to register within the country as well. Or language practitioners, you know. I just want to check because if this bill is presented or becomes an act, so does the department foresee any challenges with regard to language and education in schools? Because that's one of the issues why I'm raising it. I've seen it and they say that most of the, you know, if you're not knowing that you are a teacher, just because you can speak a Shitonga, you're made to teach people in Shitonga, or if I can speak Zulu, make it teach Zulu while I'm not qualified to be a Zulu teacher. I think those are one of the things to find in the wrong way, especially in the schools whereby there were all the students, now they're trying to bring languages on board. They will just teach anybody who can speak that language and second. So I thought I just should tell you that. Thank you for us.
Who they prefer, then they talk to the minister
then in all probability, in consultation, therefore, would require consensus between the two parties. That is the minister as well as the board. If one looks at the bill itself, we can say that after consultation with the board, which means that the minister does not necessarily need to get the consensus of the board. That is why then we have said that we will change that particular clause to say that the minister will choose the chairperson in consultation. And we are, the Pension Act is currently under review for various reasons. Among others, we need to ensure that the institutions which we give funding to, the public funds, we are able to maintain certain control over those institutions. I know one would say that we would have control over the board. That is normally the case, but it doesn't happen like that. The second question related to provide over the control of accreditation from the Honourable Member. You will recall, Honourable Member, that I indicated that particular aspect which talks to chapters, it is on the memorandum on the objects of the bill, which was already before the House, which had served before the House. So I did not read my presentation word for word. But if one looks at the legislation, it talks about providing control. In the long term, we are saying that to provide for the control of the accreditation and the registration of language practitioners. So the control is there. Your last two questions, which talk to the bill's reach to the bill provides, I know your distinction, but our view is that it is a bit technical. I mean, the bill, strictly speaking, says that this is what we seek to achieve. Now, if we have put it in the provision, in the bill itself, we are providing for that. But we seek, once it has been approved, then it means we are providing for it. The other question related to the fact that it seems like we have not given the committee clarity on the name of the bill. To me, really, there is no difference between your language professional and your language practice professional. Because in the definition, what we seem to say is that your language professional, when we define it, it would be someone who practices the profession. Your language practice professional, it just gives us that practice, which means that you are a professional who practices language. I don't think that there is much difference. Hence, we indicated that we have no objection to both names. We can go with either name. The bill can either be called South African Language Practice Professionals Council or South African Language Professionals Bill or Language Professionals Council. It's the same thing, and the definition will make sure that it can shatter that. I've addressed the fourth question, which also centered around the appointment of the chairperson. On the issue of special accreditation, experience vis-a-vis retired professionals, that issue was raised. Initially, when we confused the bill, the idea was that only those people who have a tertiary qualification would qualify to practice as professionals. For the simple reason that those people would have been given certificates to say that you are competent in what you are doing. The issue then that was raised was around those people who are proficient, but they only have experience. We have made provision that those people also be catered for in the bill. And that aspect, the nitty-gritties, will be dealt with in the regulation. However, in the bill, which I have sent to the colleagues in legal services, we we have made provision in section 32 of the bill, where I indicated that any qualification contemplated in subsection 1 obtained in its own or concerned with any other qualification or other relevant experience. I have made that proposal, has not been given to the House. However, we took into account what the committee has said, and therefore we suggested that we need to include or other relevant experience. The issue of relevant experience, I cannot say how many years of experience we will be required at this point in time. However, when we deal with regulations, we will make sure that we prescribe them the minimum years of experience to say that if you do not have a qualification, a formal qualification, but you have practiced as a language practitioner, say, for over 2 or 3 years, then by virtue of your experience, we will recognize you. That, in my view, should fall under a special accreditation or registration category, as opposed to normal. But as we draft the bill, we will determine whether we need to specify that organic translators and retired professionals need to belong there. But we have made suggestions to the drafters of the bill. The other question relates to an independent person outside from the language person, language profession. This question talks to the issue of appeal. Chief among appeal, the issue was that, if the committee members may recall, was that we have provided for appeal within 30 days or 1 month. Then the suggestion that was raised was that we need at least to review that period and provide for 90 days. We have agreed to that, to say that we will provide for 90 days. However, all we are saying is that the Board of the Council, let's say the Honourable Member said that we must look at the positive side of the bill rather than the police with the hanging group. Let us say a language practitioner has transgressed a certain provision of the bill. One would expect the board to look at the conduct of that language practitioner, and then a decision would be taken. That decision which was taken is a decision of the council. Now, all we are saying is that because the council would have taken a decision, if I appeal against that, then let someone else who is seen to be independent of the council deal with that. And that person then, we are saying, should be the minister who has oversight of the council. The board will take a decision. If I'm aggrieved by the decision of the board, let me not say three board members will hear that decision, will hear my complaint or whatever the case might be, and then we bring in 5 more members to say that now, because it's appealed, we have increased the number to ensure independence. We are saying that any decision that is taken by the council, the board of council, is the council's decision. Therefore, the minister must be that independent person who is seen to be reviewing that decision. How the minister does that in practice? The minister usually appoints an ad hoc advisory committee who will look into the matter. That committee is currently the case in other matters. You would find that the minister chooses people who have knowledge, experience in the language profession, your legal experts, and the issue in question. If it's an accounting thing, we would have to have an accountant. Then the minister, on the basis of the recommendation of that committee, would look at what has been presented to him, and the minister would take a decision. In that case, then the aggrieved member would feel that it is not the same person, it is not the council now that is looking at my matter. It is rather someone who is independent of the council. That is how we see it. The comment that language brings people closer together, and that paragraph in Africans, I think we agree wholeheartedly in that. That is the essence of the mission. It is to professionalize the profession and make sure that whatever services are rendered in an efficient manner. There are also, if one looks at the objects of the PhD, we are also saying that we will provide for training opportunities. You might find that the council sets aside particular funding to help train those people who are already in the profession, or the council organizes workshops. Those are things where then the members of the profession would actually benefit. It happens in other professions. You have your continuing legal education and training. Here we have your continuing legal language education, where language aspects would then go to people on the ground and offer those services directly. I think we all agree that this bill needs, it meets what we seek to achieve. The other question related to the appointment and removal of the CEO, the how part, how one will in effect implement that. Can I just look through the bill and see if I can get what we say in the bill itself? Just a few.
Composition of the country, that is the board of the country.
had proposed various government departments which we said that they should form part of the council. I just want to indicate the section where we dealt with that in the bill. That would be chapter 3, composition of the board. We have said that the members must be fit and proper persons to serve the best interests of their public, collectively possessing appropriate knowledge, experience, and skills in the industry. The issue basically was that we should change industry to language profession. Now, when one looks at language profession, the suggestion was that let us not simply say that we will choose people who have knowledge, experience, and skills in the language profession. Let us also list those particular categories, being therefore translation, appropriate knowledge, experience, and skills in the language industry, your Roman figure 1, translation services, interpreting, text editing, terminology, lexicography. We are saying that if we do that in the bill, in the composition of the bill, we run the risk whereby if I'm an interpreter, I look at the composition of the board, I find that there is no one who has been appointed to the board who is an interpreter. Then the interpreters would feel that no, we have been shortchanged. We do not have representation. Similarly, if I'm a translator and I look at the composition of the board, there is no one who is a translator, then I might feel that I'm not adequately represented. What we are saying is that because we have organizations like SACI and many others, those organizations, they represent a variety of language professionals, your text editors, your interpreters, your translators. Then we will, when we appoint the board, look at including those people in the board. But people should not expect to see interpreters, lexicographers, and all of those. Because if we were to list all the categories, we'll end up with 12, mainly from the language profession, and we therefore exhaust the whole composition of the board. Now, if we're saying from the language profession, it means that, as an example, we might choose about 5 people. Those 5 people could come from different categories, but not necessarily all the categories. Hence, then we said that the definition part of it would be inclusive. It will indicate who language professionals are without limitation, without necessarily having a limitation. The other question relates to how are we going to professionalize the language and elevate the status of the profession, and also how do we compensate people who are in targeted categories. I would like to just combine those questions. Firstly, what we are saying through the bill, remember initially we had said that we needed people with qualifications. We want a situation where one has services of an interpreter. He can say that that person actually is taking me what has been said. We will recall that on the second day of our presentation, I think Professor Booth made, she put up a slide where she presented to us 2 translations in English from an African translation. Now, how do you professionalize the profession? We want to ensure that any person who is expected to translate from one language to the other, firstly, he or she does that in context. Secondly, that person uses the correct meaning or the correct word so that people are not lost in translation. How do you do that? You do that by regulating who can be a language professional. Then you look at whether the person is qualified. One might argue as to why we have so many cases of negligence in that position. You will recall that the submission that was made was that if one looks at the health departments of health, we don't have translators, we do not have interpreters. If we are saying, therefore, we need people who are competent enough, it would therefore mean that those departments would be compelled to hire people who are competent to translate what the person suffers from to the doctor, so that the doctor can in turn do what is right. You will not find cases where somebody goes to a doctor because he has a problem with the knee. The next thing, the arm is missing. One can ask, what causes that? It could be translation things. It could be translation problems. Somebody says, I have a problem with the knee, but because that person is not competent enough to do the translation, the doctor ends up operating on the arm or taking out the arm. We are trying to stop those people to say that only those people who are accredited then can do that kind of job. The issue of prescribed fees, how do we compensate people who are in interest and who provide such services? I think that, members, this is a problem that we experience not only in the language profession, but also the lawyer session, finance, everywhere. You will find that you are working with a colleague for a company, your FNB or ABSA. You are not getting paid the same salary. Now, if we start to say that we want to regulate that, we must remember these are not your informal sectors like your farm workers, where we have the prescribed minimum wages and so forth. We are trying to run away from that fact to say that we need to regulate those professions as if they are in the informal sector. We will know you are a lawyer, you work in the same company with the same person, but you are not getting the same salary. I think it goes down to your negotiation skills. We do not think that we can actually prescribe salaries because these people are professionals. They have qualifications, they have experience. And also the industries where these people are employed, they will dictate how much money must be paid. For example, if you are a translator, the court, the GPSA says that you are a translator on this level, this is the salary that you get. You accept that salary, then you must perform those functions. I think the last question was around how does the bill affect the different levels of government? Members will recall that we have just passed the Use of Official Languages Act. That act prescribes that every department in the national government and public entities must have language units. Now, it is incumbent upon those people to make sure that the work that they are doing is of a high standard. And also the provinces are following likewise with their provincial acts. We want to ensure that we do not have people who hold themselves out to be language practitioners or interpreters, yet they cannot do the job. Those who cannot do the job then must be out of the system. The last question is, will we require teachers to be registered? I think this is a difficult question. I would let our policy officials deal with it. But obviously, I mean, if we were to extend this bill to teachers, we might as well then extend it to lawyers. Because when you talk, you use the language. I don't think that it is the intention of the bill to include teachers as well. But I will take input from our officials in the policy.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I just want to make this comment to see that there is indeed a concern about who should be registered.
that by doing that, then it means we are actually taking the function of the council that we are trying to stretch here. I thought I should just make that clear because I think it is very important for us to understand that the council still has a very important function to do, and it has the responsibility to stretch those standards. So if we understand it in that way, I believe that we may not necessarily over-concerned about who should be left out or who can be left out and so on and so forth. Let's just believe that the team is intending to set up a credible council. Thank you.
Maybe let me start with the appointment of the chairperson. If you look at the Pantam Act, it's quite elaborate about the process in which the council, the board appoints its own chairperson. It involves, it's an onerous process. The first meeting has to be chaired by Chief Justice, who then leads the board, the appointment of the chairperson. It is a bit of an onerous process. Our view is that it's best if the chairperson is appointed by the minister in consultation with the council. The second issue is that if the council appoints its chairperson, it's likely that the council will feel that they have a right to remove the chairperson if they feel that that's what they should be done. We've had instances in some of our institutions where councils have tried to remove the chairpersons because they disagree with the chairperson on something. And this is extremely disruptive in the operations of a board. And it is important that in authority of the minister appoints the council, he has some consultation, so that if there are problems, the minister is able to intervene and deal with those problems rather than subject it to whatever politics might happen within an institution. The second issue I want to deal with is the issue of appeal. Obviously, we are bound by principles of public administration, one of which is that an institution cannot hear appeals on a decision that it makes, or a person cannot hear decisions on cannot hear an appeal on decisions that they make. Now, committees of the council are actually acting on behalf of the council. So you cannot have a committee that takes a decision from the council and another committee from the same council hearing an appeal, because obviously. That would be irregular. And hence our proposal that the authority to appoint the council, which is the minister, should also hear appeals from decisions of the minister. That is in fact in line with the current cultural institutions act, through which if some of the councils that we have, if the public or any member of the member of the public is unhappy with the decision of that council, they can appeal that to the minister. Next chair.
I'd just like to add a little substance to some of the points that were raised in terms of, I think there's a sense that the council may be limiting in terms of who might be a language practitioner. I think that if you have the qualification or the experience to do this very specific task that requires specific skills, and they are listed in terms of your translation, your editing, you have to be able to develop terminology, you have to be able to at least do a dictionary or something of the sort. That limitation will exclude people who use language to do what they do, including teachers, as Mr. Teacher has pointed out, lawyers and everything. So it is a very specific skill, specific activity that the council addresses. But it issue of the tagging as a 75 section bill in terms of what can happen to the provinces. Now, I think it and the use of the Official Languages Act are sort of complementary, because the constitution itself allows the provinces to be autonomous and do their own legislation. It will not necessarily be able to cover that area. However, if you're sitting in the provinces, you're not denied the opportunities you needed to become a language practitioner and look forward to working in a national government office where you might be required to have this accredited certificate to show that you can actually be a professional. Because it is about standards, and it is about protecting the people who receive this product and protecting the people who are in this profession. So it won't really be limiting in a sense. So it is for the purposes of those that will want to work in those language units. I think that that covers that.
Let me add just a general comment about what this bill really seeks to deal with. Because I think we shouldn't make the mistake of interpreting the bill as dealing with people who use language. The bill does not deal with people who use language. We all use language. The bill seeks to regulate people who are in the language profession, which means people who exercise language skills professionally. It's people who provide editing. It's people who develop lexicographies and diaries and dictionaries and all these things which are language-based. It's not people who use language. The reason why that is important is because you are creating a profession which you got to hold professionals to a particular professional standard. Now, any person like myself who uses language, I cannot be held to a professional standard in my use of language, because I'm not a language profession, and I don't represent myself as that. The bill seeks to protect the public who utilize the services of the professionals, so that if a person represents themselves as a language professional, which means to translate a document for me, I have got a confidence that this person knows what they are talking about because they are accredited by a council. They are accredited. It's like going to a doctor. If I go to a doctor, I know that they call themselves a medical doctor because they are accredited with the South African Medical and Dental Association or whatever the name of that is. Same thing if I go to an architect. They call themselves an architect because they are accredited by the relevant institution in architecture. The same goes for the chartered accountant and so forth. The real basic principle about that is the protection of the public that utilizes those principles. And therefore it's important to make that point and make it quite clear. The second issue is that the council then, which is appointed, is going to determine the processes, is going to determine which categories of people actually can be accredited. And I think that's a critical role of the council. It says if you're going to be accredited, you need this experience, you need that qualification, you need to practice so many of the disciplines within the languages. Unfortunately, I don't know them. But that's the responsibility of the council. They will accredit people, they can accredit the training professionals, the training courses, ongoing professional development and all those kinds of things. But that is what the council is really for, in order to ensure that people who practice as professionals have the necessary skill to do so and do so in a way that is credible. I just want to say it's important to add that.
Thank you, Chair. Can I give him about 10 minutes, please? There's also two other points. Can I just take a minute? 10 minutes break.
Yeah, well.